Good afternoon. You're listening to Jefferson Public Radio's Classics and News Service. I'm Vanessa Finney. Today we're live in the Steve Nelson studio with Oregon-born classical guitarist and composer Ty Austin. His solo guitar repertoire spans classical, flamenco, fado, chanson, tango, salsa and samba, bossa nova and choro, reggae, jazz, and his own original compositions. He's the artistic director of Wilder Frets, a concert series that brings world-class classical guitar performances into natural wilderness settings. He's currently on tour in our area with performances in Ashland and Brookings coming up this week. Ty, welcome back to JPR.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thanks for taking a break from performing to talk about performing to our listeners. I hear you've been playing right here in our own backyard for the past 2 days at the Tuvelle State Park near Table Rock. What was the scene like there and what was on the program?
It was beautiful. That's a very special park to me. I spent a lot of time salmon fishing along the shores of the Rogue River overlooking the Table Rock Mountains in the background. So I wanted to make sure that I included that location on my tour this year. I set up the beautiful pop-up stage, kind of framed between these large oak trees with the Table Rocks in the background. So it's really, really picturesque. And this summer's program is featuring a lot of Spanish and Latin American guitar music, as well as some of my original compositions inspired by wilderness landscapes here in Oregon.
Terrific. Well, how did you discover classical guitar in the first place?
By happenstance. One night I was attending a music festival at the Jackson Well Springs right here in Ashland, Oregon. And after the main stage headliners had finished their sets, a group of us had gathered around a campfire to sing Bob Dylan covers until like 3 a.m. And at one point, the main guitarist took a break and there was this woman who asked the gentleman to play his style of guitar music. And I was immediately intrigued because I thought there was only one way to play the guitar, which is essentially strumming chords with your left hand in first position and your right hand kind of going up and down with the pick, and then singing lyrics over top. Anyway, he went to his car, grabbed his guitar, and came back to make one guitar sound like four guitars simultaneously. And I was immediately transfixed. An epiphany washed over me. I knew exactly what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. And so I bought my first guitar at a pawn shop in Medford, Oregon, for $60. And we've been best friends ever since.
Fantastic. And we'll get to your current guitar a little later in the interview.
Sure.
What a key question from that audience member. It really unlocked not only something, you know, just that's honoring a person's own repertoire and preferences, but it really unlocked things for at least one person in the audience. Mm-hmm. And then you went on to study music. You have a master's degree. Where did you study? And were there any specific areas of performance or music that you focused on?
Yeah, absolutely. So shortly after running into that individual at the music festival, we happened to be waiting for the same bus one day, and I immediately recognized him and asked him to teach me, and he graciously accepted, even though I didn't have any money to pay him. Worked out a work trade agreement where I would come over every Sunday morning for a guitar lesson, and then as payment, I would help him cook a massive pot of stew for the homeless there in Lithia Park. His name is Comac Tapp, and he really saw a lot of potential and fostered that from a really early age. And before long, I started to have questions that he couldn't answer. So he recommended that I audit music fundamentals at Southern Oregon University, which is where we're at today, and asked to take private guitar lessons with David Rogers, who also taught me for free for the first 5 months because he saw potential in me as well. So within that time frame, he prepared me with the appropriate repertoire to successfully audition for the music major at Southern Oregon University in 2008. So that's when my academic career really began. And in 2014, I moved to Boston to pursue my Master of Music degree at the New England Conservatory of Music under the tutelage of Elliot Fisk, the last direct pupil of Andre Segovia.
Yes. Yes, that's quite a feather in your cap there. That's amazing. What are your takeaways today from Elliot Fisk?
Well, I would say you need to be a trailblazer. You need to create your own opportunities. And that's really at the core of Wilder Frets, Classical Guitar in the Wilderness. It's about spearheading your own initiatives instead of waiting for someone to choose you or to give you permission in this life. So I would say that's what I took away from Elliot the most.
Excellent. And you've definitely, I would say, demonstrated a sort of musical entrepreneurship with the creation of this whole Wilder Frets program. You went on from the conservatory in Boston to do additional training at the Royal Conservatory of Music in Granada.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I spent an entire summer abroad studying flamenco and traditional Spanish classical guitar all across the entire country, from Barcelona to Madrid to Granada, Sevilla, Cordoba, Cadiz. Traveled all over the place. I spent most of my time in Granada and really focused on traditional repertoire such as Recuerdos de la Alhambra, which was composed by Francisco Tárrega, while musing at the beautiful Alhambra Palace. And I learned that piece while sitting on my rooftop terrace overlooking the Alhambra Palace, which was quite poetic.
I just got goosebumps.
Yeah.
Well, Ty, you'll be playing three songs for us today, and that's a perfect nod to... Let's have you set up the music by explaining your personal connection to Spanish and Latin American repertoire, because it goes beyond just your postgraduate studies in Spain.
Yeah. So that's, I'm glad you mentioned that, because when I was studying abroad in Spain, I was feeling this sense of homesickness, but I didn't know where for. I didn't know about my ancestry at the time. It wasn't until 5 years later that I would learn that I'm a descendant of some of the most notorious pirates of the Caribbean. And they came from Basque region in northern Spain in a little place called Orduña. And they fled during the Spanish Inquisition, learned how to operate a schooner in Bordeaux, France, and eventually set sail to the New World via Saint Domingue, which is modern-day Haiti. And then they went on to set up the most successful smuggling operation in New Orleans, Louisiana, which is where my mother's side of the family is all from. And it's still Pierre's Blacksmith Shop and Bar, still the oldest standing structure in U.S. history today. And anyway, Jean Lafitte, my distant uncle, granduncle, I should say, helped facilitate the Louisiana Purchase in 1803. And that, obviously that led way to Lewis and Clark and the Oregon Trail. And they were captured by the U.S. in 1812 and given an ultimatum: you either spend time in prison or you fight alongside us against the British and the Spanish in this upcoming war. And believe it or not, the U.S. Navy gave a pirate and his crew full control over their naval fleet, and my ancestors helped them win the War of 1812, which gave us the Oregon Territory, ceded from Spain.
Fascinating. And
so
here you
all
are.
Of this region used to be a Spanish colony, yeah. And so that's why I was gravitated to the instrument in the first place, and I didn't even know it. But it turns out it was in my DNA. So.
Yeah, in your lifeblood. Okay, I understand you're going to play Spanish Romance for us.
Yeah, this is the first piece that I heard Comac Tap perform that fateful night, and it's also the first piece that he taught me how to play during our lessons. Mm. Thank you.
You just heard Ty Austin playing Spanish Romance live on the Classics and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio. We're broadcasting from the campus of Southern Oregon University, where Ty studied as a native of Ashland and is currently tuning up his guitar again. He's the producer of Wilder Frets, an open-air concert series at iconic wilderness landscapes across the state of Oregon, in partnership with the Oregon State Parks Department and the Portland-based company Heartbeat Silent Disco. So, Ty, it might be a good time to hear about the technology used in these outdoor spaces. You're in parks, wineries, farms, the beach. How does Heartbeat facilitate your audience hearing you in that kind of environment?
Absolutely, yeah. So I reached out to Heartbeat Silent Disco and their nonprofit extension called Community Beats, and was just curious about some rental rates to facilitate this upcoming tour. And they generously offered to sponsor the entire season. So they provided wireless headphone technology for audiences to really hear the acoustic fidelity preserved through the headset. And they can also customize their volume. And then they can explore each landscape up to a quarter mile radius from the stage area. Furthermore, we also have a subtle amplification. So anybody who doesn't want to wear the headphones, they can all sit near the stage and enjoy the music.
Okay, so a couple different options there. Mm-hmm. Well, you were last interviewed here at JPR in 2013 by our announcer, Don Matthews.
It's been a minute.
Yeah, some of our longtime listeners may even remember that. Back then, you were in your senior year at SOU, preparing for your first Carnegie Hall concert. So it's a good time to get a retrospective on your creative growth and journey since then. How do you feel? This is a big question, but how do you feel that you've grown as an artist and even as a music business person in the last decade or so?
Honestly, I've never felt more like a beginner. And I felt the same way when they handed me my master's degree walking across the stage at New England Conservatory. I really recognize the full weight and breadth of this undertaking to become a professional classical guitarist. And it's a learning process every day. So in a lot of ways, I still feel like I was when I was a teenager, you know. And then I kind of look back at the distance that I've traveled, and I have to take a moment to give myself recognition and credit for developing this business into what it is today.
That sounds like a healthy mindset, because if you are a lifelong learner, so like it sounds like you are, you know, committed to constantly developing your craft, you also want to give yourself accolades. Okay, we've come this far so far. So, you know, don't just focus on the difficulty that you're experiencing
exactly.
The moment. Another thing you do is that you sing, not just in English, which we'll hear later in the interview, but in several romance languages, Spanish, French, Italian, and Portuguese. Have you always sung, or is it this repertoire that pulled you into that?
Yeah, well, here at SOU, they make every music major study the piano and participate in 4 years of choir. So that's kind of a prerequisite. If you want to be a music major, you have to learn how to sing. And that's really where I developed my love for singing, was singing, you know, traditional Bach chorales and Ave Marias during the holidays and whatnot. So, and then, you know, being here at SOU, we were also exposed to many different languages and dialects and had some vocal coaches and stuff to work with us. So, it really came in handy. And as I kind of progressed and matured and developed, you know, explored new repertoire, such as bossa nova and samba and choro, I really started to connect with Portuguese and Spanish, considering that most of this music I play is already from these areas.
Right, the source languages.
Yeah, exactly.
So these are complementary art forms, singing and playing. Do you feel creative in a different way as a vocalist compared to as an instrumentalist?
No, I wouldn't really say I feel differently. I would say I'm a musician first, and I'm a guitarist second, vocalist third.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, you wrote a song out of homesickness, which we're going to hear next. And looking at your list of travel, I can see why you might get homesick. You've performed at the most renowned concert halls around the world, at the United Nations, at international residencies. You've toured extensively around the globe. How do these opportunities tend to come to you, and how did you prepare for them mentally and physically, both the demands of travel and this surely high artistic expectations?
Well, I would say, I mean, a lot of opportunities come from my own volition. Again, this kind of roots back to my kind of natural born business acumen, and realizing that if I want to have the career and live the life that I want to, I really have to take it upon myself to manifest or, you know, fabricate these opportunities for myself. I would say the next composition is actually not my original composition, but it's actually composed by Francisco Tárrega during his first tour in London, when he was feeling a bit homesick and a bit depressed because all of the people talked with funny accents and it never stopped raining. And so he wrote this piece called Lágrima, or Teardrop, as an homage to his homeland in Spain. And so I carry this with me wherever I go, as I travel throughout the world, as a kind of a balm for my soul to just reconnect with not only my homeland in Spain, but considering that my birthplace was here in Oregon, I now take this composition and kind of apply those same feelings of homeland and nostalgia to it.
Okay, Lágrima, performed by Ty Austin. We're live from the Steve Nelson Studio at Jefferson Public Radio in Ashland. I'm Vanessa Finney, and my guest is classical guitarist Ty Austin, who just performed Francisco Tárrega's Lágrima. Ty is currently on a 35-concert tour through our listening area with Wilder Frets, which presents classical guitar concerts in outdoor settings. He'll be at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival Green Show on August 21st, and at Harris Beach State Park in Brookings on August 22nd and 23rd. Now, Ty, you also served, this is one of your more fun assignments, I would think, as the principal classical guitarist for Royal Caribbean International Cruise Lines. What's that life as a cruise performer? What's the schedule like? Did it allow for much exploration and adventure?
That was actually a tale of unfortunate events. I had been auditioning for Royal Caribbean International Cruise Lines for about 5 years, like every 4 to 5 months, and I was constantly rejected. Then finally I learned that you have to have a manager to represent you. So as soon as I got a manager, I got hired overnight. But unfortunately, this was at the end of 2019, after I just got back from Shanghai, China. And I was slated to begin April of 2020. And so I was on tour between Seattle and LA for February and March of 2020. And as you may remember, the pandemic hit Seattle in middle of March. And so about 50 concerts plus my cruise ship contract got canceled indefinitely. And so I never actually got to go out and set sail. But it's interesting because, as I was telling you before, Royal Caribbean International Cruise Lines follows the same trade winds and trade routes that my ancestors developed.
Oh, my gosh. That's fascinating.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a true pirate here.
The cycles of history.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Interesting. What were you doing in Shanghai?
I was there for a music performance and education residency with the I School of Music. And basically, I was supposed to be there for about a year and a half, and starting in the summer of 2019. And there was already some kind of mysterious whisperings about this strange illness spreading around. And plus, I've just never really experienced true authoritarianism in my life until I, you know, visited China. And so it was a bit of culture shock for me. And something in my soul was saying, leave. You need to get out of here. Like I had a 3-month window contract in my contract to bow out. So I did. And I thought that I was making a huge, huge mistake for my career at the time. But 3 months after getting back to the U.S., Wuhan got hit by the virus. So my intuition was right on point there.
Absolutely. What an interesting connection to the pandemic you have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the last song you'll be performing is a river song. This is called Waters Willamette. Why don't you set this up for us?
Well, actually, as we discussed, I'm going to play one of my love songs that I wrote for the Willamette River. This is a bossa nova tune in English. This is called Bossa Rio. Sing to the sky because we are blue. I wish I could fly just to say I flew. I hear the waters flowing to the sea like river otters floating beside me. Willamette is the river that makes me wanna give her my all. And when I'm swimming in her, I feel like I'm a winner, though I fall. Willamette is the river that makes me wanna give her my all. And like my arrow quiver, its purpose can deliver Cupid's call. I smell the spring trees, dogwood is in bloom, forest filtered breeze, salmon coming soon. I hear butterflies, they too are blue, as they flutter by, composing this
tune. Reminder, you're tuned in to the Classics and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Vanessa Finney, talking live to internationally acclaimed classical guitarist Ty Austin. You just heard him perform his original called Bossa Rio. That's right in line with what I think of as one of the traditions of bossa nova, and that is a lot of nature imagery.
You got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was this Netflix special a while back. I can't remember what it was called. It might be Girl from Ipanema or something like that. But anyway, that's one of the main themes that I was noticing in that series. There was a kind of a side character who was responsible for writing a lot of bossa nova hits. And what I realized was that they were basically writing love songs for nature. And so that's kind of what I try to do at this stage in my life, because I'm, you know, I'm a bachelor through and through, approaching 37, so still have no plans on getting married in the near future. So instead of writing songs for women, I decided to shift and write love songs for the wilderness.
Ah, music is your mistress.
Yes. Yeah.
And you were doing a certain comping pattern, mm-hmm. right? Do you want to demonstrate that? Is it a...
Sure. So this is kind of a standard bossa nova pattern. It's essentially two eighth notes followed by two groupings of 16th to eighth note 16ths. So it sounds like this. One and two E, oh, three E, oh, four N. So that's kind of the vibe. And then you essentially just kind of add some schmaltzy jazz harmonies from Europe and you get bossa nova.
Perfect. Thank you for doing that.
You got it.
Let's talk about that beautiful instrument for a bit. Who made this guitar?
Well, this guitar is actually a 1856 replica of Antonio Torres, made by Manuel Adelide in Valencia. But you're probably wondering about the Rogue guitar, which was handcrafted specifically for me and the Wilder Frets project by Portland-based luthier Maxwell T. Sipe. And this guitar is incredibly unique because I spent about 5 to 6 years carefully researching and selecting 10 native tone woods to my home state. So the guitar is an homage to the forest that inspired me to become a musician in the first place. And most guitars feature about 3 to 4 different species of wood, but this guitar has 10 different species, plus a lot of beautiful regional aesthetics
okay.
into it as well.
Well, Ty, that's all the time we have for today. It was great to talk with you about your life and work, and best of luck on your tour.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to a special live session from the Steve Nelson Studio at Jefferson Public Radio with Oregon-born virtuoso guitarist and composer Ty Austin. He's currently sharing his Wilder Frets program of classical guitar and outdoor settings throughout our region this month, including Ashland and Brookings. You can see his entire schedule through October at wilderfrets.org/tour. Our show today was engineered by John Griffin. I'm Vanessa Finney.